This is the February 3 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Dave Chatterton. He's with Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. Ellen Dearden is here from AgriView in Morton, Illinois. And Logan Kimmel of Rochag Marketing out of Naperville, Illinois joins us as well. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Visit us at willag.org, willag.org. And as of this week, you can register for our annual Beef House Conference, the Spring Outlook, in March on the 8th day. That's a Tuesday. It's just $25. We dropped the cost of that, believe it or not. The cost has gone down. Our Spring Outlook, in conjunction this year with the Farm Doc team, the Ag Economist from the University of Illinois, should be a great day. The Will Ag panelists, the Farm Doc team, Eric Snodgrass from Nutrient Ag Solutions there, all to talk about what is coming up in the spring as it's related to corn, soybeans, and the marketplace. Speaking of which, we'll be talking about that today as well. Dave Chatterton, can you give me an idea of what you've been considering this week in the marketplace?
Hey, Todd, thanks for having me, and greetings from snowy central Illinois here today. But lots to talk about in the market. Always, you know, a million things that we could hit on. I think there's two or three key things that are moving the market here of late. First out is volatility, I think I want to mention, just because, you know, I think it's a lesson of what we're going to see going forward for this year. The combination of a weather market in South America that's reduced the supply in conjunction with what's happening on the inflation play and commodity and money flow into commodities and perhaps out of equities, along with now a geopolitical front, has really ramped up the volatility in our marketplace. I mean, good example, since December 1st, we've seen beans rally. Nearby soybeans on the board rally over $3. We've seen a $2 plus rally just really in just over 2 weeks here. So certainly some pretty stunning moves and changes in our outlook going forward. South America is the hottest topic of discussion right now. It's been a little bit of a race to the bottom as far as how low we can go with it with the crop estimates, particularly around the Brazilian soybean production number. I think we're probably about ready to round that out on the downside from the private market, but everyone is anxious to see what the USDA will have to say when they bring out their numbers next week along with CONAB. I think we also hit on real quick, I think we're in a situation where we've seen an unprecedented amount of money that's come into the commodity markets here of late, whether that's an index fund, an ETF, or directly into commodity futures. And in doing so, ags, you know, oil is certainly has a story in that situation, but ags have also, I think, captured a good degree of that capital flow, or more than their fair share of that capital flow, as the story in South America has developed. Geopolitically, of course, we're watching what's happening very closely in the Ukraine. You've got Ukraine as the world's number one. Russia is the world's number one wheat exporter. Ukraine is number two. The Ukraine is 16% of global corn exports. So certainly a very important and commodity-centric part of the world, both for grain and for oil. So all those things adding volatility, we're seeing prices here where we stand. If you took those on a 10-year history, Todd, just looked at, let's say, old crop or new crop corn or soybean levels, basically you're in the top 10, 15, 20% of what would be the historical range over the last 10 years. So from a risk management, or just from a very simplistic standpoint of looking at your risk on the farm, you know, be aware of that, get yourself to a marketing level that you feel comfortable with. It doesn't mean we won't see more upside, but I think volatility is certainly going to be the rule, and it doesn't always have to be to the upside.
So Ellen Dearden, I want to know from you on the cash grain side of the situation in the United States, how you see both corn and soybeans and the underpinnings of this very high-priced marketplace.
I think it's really been interesting on the Illinois River just over the last 2 weeks' time. We've seen the bean basis improve rather rapidly, and I think that does reflect the large book that will be moved out of the U.S. Gulf. And China's been an active buyer of beans, even though we had a cancellation today listed on the daily reporting service. There were some questions towards the end of the day whether or not that was really a cancellation, or was it going to be a movement into new crop? So the bean basis on the Illinois River anyway is pretty sloppy on the corn. We've lost ground there. This is a processor market, not usually much of a river market on corn at this time of year. But when you get further to the west, we see a rather hot corn basis remaining, but a little bit weaker on the bean basis.
Hey, Logan, Roach Ag Marketing is famous for the buy and sell signals. I'm wondering what the market's been telling your clients to do.
Yeah, very active week here. And I think the one main question we've had and discussed with producers is looking at new crop, specifically beans. Today and yesterday, knocking on the door of $14 futures. And boy, you look back a month ago and had a tough time chopping around 13, and really amazing to see 14, and producers wanting to know if this is the right spot to make sales. And we are in a sell signal, and I think it is wise to get something done at these levels. You can always come back in on a break and a dip and get some calls behind it. That doesn't mean there's not more upside or no more downside. I think it's a level that warrants getting some work done on new crop beans. And boy, you asked me a month ago if we'd be up here. I think a lot of people wouldn't have guessed this, but it's a nice opportunity we have to start off the year here.
So your sell signals are on for both old and new crop soybeans?
That's correct. Right now we are recommending, if you got some old crop beans still, to dribble out some sales, as well as new crop getting a stake in the ground and getting a start here just below $14 futures.
Alan Dearden, you want to add anything to that as it relates to old and new crop cash sales?
No, I don't think there's a lot to add. We have been watching the December corn November bean ratios, and that thing spread out to about 2.41 this week, which puts some onus on beans to try to play catch up and stay up there with corn.
I'll stay with you for one more question. End users getting tired of paying such high prices yet for these crops?
I haven't heard anybody complaining very much outside of feedlots. Feedlots are really feeling the pinch.
Interesting. Now, I'll turn my attention back to you, Dave Chatterton. We talked about supply side, or you did up front, as it relates to the South American crop. On the world market, what do you think this means over the next 3 to 5 months?
Well, I think the biggest thing, Todd, is it's changed the long-term outlook. You're talking about a loss somewhere in the order of 15 to 20 million metric tons of South American soybean supply, and probably maybe half of that on corn, although that's a little bit more of an open book. But in terms of what that does to the balance sheet, not only globally, but also in the U.S., it's much, you know, it definitely changes the long-term view. When you start to break that down into how that export demand may shift towards the U.S. and the timing of that, I think it's interesting. I mean, initially, I think the thought was that maybe this could be mostly new crop because, you know, Brazil would still have a, you know, right now we're still projecting, even with a big decline, their second biggest, you know, soybean crop ever. But we've seen here of late that the offers of, you know, the FOB offers that we're seeing out of South America, really, U.S. values right now are competitive. We're about maybe a dime behind where the South American offers are here for the spot month. But when you get into May and June, we're actually at an advantage. I think that tells you that the market senses that there may be a pretty big problem down there with origination and with getting beans past the processor and to the port. So that's going to add demand into the U.S. balance sheet, not only for old crop, but also particularly, I think, for new crop. It keeps us in a situation where, as kind of Logan led into, you know, a month ago or maybe 6 weeks ago or certainly 2 or 3 months ago coming out of harvest, we were in a situation of looking for those year-on-year carryout numbers to bump up pretty strongly. And Ellen hit it on. I mean, there's an idea that we could get more bean acres going forward. So with with the corn-bean ratio moving in favor of beans and with the new crop balance sheet now looking like it could actually tighten and send support values, you know, somewhere in this neighborhood or what would be, you know, we're looking at a record February crop insurance price if we stay here. Certainly it's going to be a different viewpoint going down the road here in U.S. demand, particularly on the export side, looks to be improving in soybeans.
So Logan Kimmel, can you put this in some perspective? He mentioned that this would be the second largest soybean crop that the Brazilians have ever raised. It is now the largest soybean crop, not this year, but Brazil is the largest soybean producer on the planet, their second largest crop ever. The United States, the largest corn producer on the planet, last fall, harvested the second largest crop it has ever harvested. Yet, March soybeans, or March corn, is at $6.16, and the November soybeans are $13.92, as you mentioned, knocking on $14. This doesn't all seem correct. Is it a supply chain issue? Is it a demand issue? Or is it actually supply that is just short?
Well, I think there is a lot of moving parts. And, you know, Dave mentioned it earlier, kind of a race to the bottom on these South America estimates. We've seen a couple private estimates come out, lowering it sharply, from StoneX. And I think ultimately next week's report, we'll get a better update on what the USDA is thinking. And they did start very high at their initial estimates for their crop at a record. So the dryness, I think we're seeing that play into the nearby futures for sure in the last 2-3 weeks on this run-up. And I think it's a combination of a few things. On the beans especially, the funds piling in back in on beans and buying up that market has helped, probably due to the dryness in southern Brazil. So again, I think it could all be different here in a week once we get USDA numbers, but that's been in a combination why we've seen a recent run up here and money flow coming in, this inflationary market on top of everything else, including crude oil hitting the $90 level today. That's still a sign of money flow, big markets, and inflationary aspects in these commodities.
Alan, I know you follow the charts fairly closely. Is there anything in the chart that you like or dislike for either corn or soybeans?
I do not like the bear spreading in both corn and beans. It's not tremendously bearish right now, but I did not like how easily March corn fell from that $6.40 level back down to the 20-day moving average at $6.11 today. One thing I do like about the bean market is that we've been trying to support beans on bean oil alone. And really, over the last 3 weeks, we've seen a stellar upside move in the meal. Part of that is due to some big export tenders for meal that had been flashed around. And now we've seen actual move. We're up about $100 a ton in meal over the last month's time when the beans were up, nearly $3. But the bean meal is starting to be a factor.
Dave Chatterton, when farmers call, what do they ask more often than not of you these days?
That's an interesting question, Todd. But I think most of them, I think there's two things. One is certainly with remaining old crop stocks, farmers are looking for the top. And should I sell here? What should we be looking for? I think they realize that these are profoundly profitable levels, at least on the old crop. I think in new crop, the question is how much do I sell and what percentage should I get to? And that's a different question for every producer, but certainly the profitability outlook for next year is a little bit different because of the fertilizer prices and because of what the acreage mix may or may not be. Do beans significantly take acres away from corn? Small grains are in that conversation as well and where things go. But I think they're very cautiously optimistic here, Todd, and they're wanting to, in many cases, they see the profit that's available on the table right now. It's very unusual, particularly at this time of the crop year, to be able to lock in profitable levels. And if we can, I mentioned earlier the crop insurance period, we're setting these prices during the month of February for what will be the spring guarantee price. And in doing so, looking at an 80 and 85% product or even a private product that takes you up to a 95% guarantee level, can be a lot of producers out here in central Illinois that can guarantee, $1,000, $1,100, $1,200 per acre of gross revenue in corn and almost guarantee profitability. So it's a really unique situation. And I think they're adapting to how do I move forward in this landscape and what am I missing that, what can make this market, tank or move lower. And certainly there are some things that we can talk about. But, in general, I would say that our producers have moved their marketing both on an old crop and a new crop level well above what would be the historical norm, if you will.
Hey, Logan, gross income, particularly, for both corn and soybeans, at these levels would be really, really high. But as Mr. Chatterton mentioned, it's relatively independent by farmer and maybe more so for corn than for soybeans. Possibly, it depends on how they locked in their fertilizer rates. But a farmer who has all of their nitrogen on and locked it in earlier in the year, summer months, is facing a far different kind of income year in 2022 than somebody who did not. Of your clientele, how many do you think have locked it in as a percentage at a lower rate, and how many are suffering or will be suffering through a much higher rate, which by the numbers from the FarmDoc team and Gary Schnitke could, even at the levels that we're talking about for total gross income, net a $50 loss on corn for the coming year. So do most people have this locked in, or are they stuck with a higher nitrogen bill than they'd really like?
Yeah, good question. I think it varies from operation to operation. I think everybody is feeling that, though, in some shape or form. And I think that just speaks to each individual sitting down and in corn, for an example, looking at their profit levels and if they need to be getting crop locked in here, that is what we are recommending, getting a portion done and still waiting for a few more opportunities as we plant the crop throughout the spring and summer and see if you can get a push on December corn and maybe approach that $6 level, because the next 40 cents can be the make or break per acre, depending on where each individual's inputs are locked in. So that's why we think it's going to be important to focus on that and make smarter marketing decisions given the current high input cost associated with this next year's crop.
Ellen, it does seem odd to be talking about $6 corn and $14 soybeans and potentially limiting losses for the coming year. Do you have to have that conversation very often?
Not very often, but I have had it from time to time. And it seems to me that we need to be focusing, rather than the actual price of futures when we're talking about goals, is we should be talking about profits and when we can lock in profits. So that has been part of my conversation.
No, that's a whole new spreadsheet function, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so you have to have all your cost and or good estimates of your cost in place and try to figure out what profit per acre is, as opposed to just selling what you see as a good price. What other things should we talk about? The USDA supply and demand report is out next week. Dave, you mentioned that. It seems like USDA could make some changes, certainly to the South American crop side. Any other places that they might make adjustments, for instance, in wheat or someplace else?
Well, yeah, Todd, I think everything's on the table here, as it always is with the USDA. And one thing that we say with the USDA, regardless of the report, is that they're always good for a surprise somewhere. And of course, that can break in either direction. The South American, you know, production numbers will certainly be the focus of the trade's attention. That will be followed by how they handle, you know, the U.S. balance sheet in terms of, do they actually increase exports or how they do that. Currently, bean exports in the U.S. are still running roughly 22% behind where they were a year ago. The USDA is calling for a full year reduction of about 9.5%. So even with some additional bushels coming in or additional demand coming in, we still have a little bit of a hole to plug. U.S. corn exports are more in line. We've seen ethanol be an overperformer to date, but those margins have now gotten back to break even to slightly negative. We've got ethanol stocks going to near record highs and a little bit of a slowdown in the process. Domestic crush here in the U.S. has been on fire. It's been at record levels. That combines with what's been a pretty strong export side. I think, you know, we did see the U.S. attaché here lower its import goal for Chinese corn. They went down to 20 million metric tons from 24, where the USDA currently sits, or 26, excuse me. And I think that's very interesting. We saw some cancellations today on corn from China. China's got a record new crop book of business on the corn side with the U.S., and not very much of that corn is shipped year to date. So certainly if there's a slowdown in China, whether it's economic or COVID related, whether it's just because of their margins or high prices, you know, whatever number, you want to pick, I think that's a situation, something that we'll be watching closely. China's kind of gotten buried in the conversation here as we focus on South American production, but their demand is actually slowing down a little bit year over year, and looks like it could stay that way into the year. And of course, they are the 800-pound gorilla in the room when it comes to commodity demand. So, you know, wheat is its whole, you know, a whole other universe of things that we can talk about, Todd. So there's going to be a lot of numbers there to watch and to parse through.
Alan Dearden, he mentioned China, and I'm wondering on the geopolitical front, of course, we have Ukraine, Russia, China, Taiwan, and then the Biden administration putting a lot of pressure on China at this point to try to, well, not putting pressure on them to meet their trade agreement, but putting pressure on them that they did not meet their trade agreement. Those are two different kinds of things. Is that worrisome to you at all?
The way this White House deals with China is a big question mark to me. It seems to me that the focus really ought to be on Taiwan, Beijing, and that hasn't come up at all. We seem to be worried more about meeting targets for trade.
And why does that worry you?
Well, it seems to me that the Taiwan, Beijing questions are huge ones, could blow open as easily as Ukraine, Russia. And, you know, look at the movement of U.S. ships into the Strait of, or the Sea of South China Sea. And but that's gotten very little press. We've got a lot more press on how many troops we're moving into Romania and towards the Ukraine.
Logan Kimmel, anything to add on the geopolitical front? If not, we have not addressed inflation and money flow.
Yeah, I just to briefly touch on geopolitical. One interesting thing I noticed here on the close, possibly tied to the Russia-Ukraine kind of lack of news here, is on the wheat markets. You've really come down in the last week or so from this $8 level, and are testing today. You bounced off of on Chicago wheat 200-day moving average. It feels like you know the wheat market needs to hold here. If that does break through to the downside, it'd be interesting to see how that weighs on the corn market too. Again, respectful close off that 200 bar, but boy, it's really taken a toll on this wheat market the last 10 days, coming down sharply from the recent high that we got on the Russia-Ukraine headline news. So maybe the snowstorm coming through, getting some moisture in the wheat belts, attributing to that. But just something interesting to watch to finish out the week here is how this wheat market reacts at major support levels on Chicago, KC, and spring wheat.
How much inflation do you think, Dave Chatterton, is built into the current commodity markets?
Well, it's certainly a hot topic, Todd. I mean, if you look at the headline number, we're, you know, the CPI, we're at a 40-year high. I think if you look at food inflation or just look at the things that we buy every day, whether we talked about, you know, inputs on farming production or the iron and the steel that goes into that, the labor, you know, if we look at the grocery store, the gas pump, wherever you want, I think certainly it's higher than what it has been. We still have a record amount of injected capital or liquidity running around in these global marketplaces. And when we look at the numbers, we saw a record, you know, dollar influx into the commodity, you know, the index funds in the fourth quarter of the year. And I think that's continued as we've moved forward here into the new year. Certainly that's been supportive of prices. And I think you have a U.S. Fed here that, you know, with all due respect, probably fishing a little bit behind the boat and maybe not quite sure how to handle this. Think about the amount of people in this marketplace, and particularly in the equity marketplace, that weren't around 40 years ago in the 80s, to see 16%, 17%, 18%, percent type of interest rates, and how they're going to handle that and adjust that is going to be, you know, very interesting here. And certainly commodities have had the appeal of investors. I think the biggest way to frame that up is that if we kind of look at the notional value of that global, we'll call it equity, you know, traditional investment market, and compared to the global commodity market, it's about a 60-to-1x. So in other words, that global equity presence or dollar figure is 60 times bigger than the global commodity market. So when those investors make small changes, I'm shifting 5 or 10% of my portfolio into a commodity facing investment, it has a multiplying effect on our markets. And I think that's part of the volatility that we've talked about earlier. But certainly how the Fed is going to battle inflation and how they're going to get it under control, and if and when they're going to get it under control, has the investor market nervous, and it's been to our benefit to date. It is a two-sided slope, meaning that if we get to the point where the equity market totally falls off a cliff and goes into a free fall, it's going to be risk off for everyone. And regardless of all the fundamental things that we've just talked about with the grain markets, we'll see the money, you know, go to the sidelines. So it's going to be an interesting year, Todd, for sure.
Ellen Dearden, I'm wondering one last thing as a question for you, because you do some technical trading and clearly pay attention to the charts. Given black box trading and the volatility in the market, how important is that?
It's very important. It seems to me that we get information, fundamental information, behind the way after the technical moves taken place. So I watch the technicals first.
Let's get a final thought from each of you. I'll begin with you, Logan Kimmel from Roachag Marketing out of Naperville, Illinois.
Well, again, wrapping up the week here, extreme volatility, very large price swings, specifically in the beans. I think it's an important time right now where producers, as we've touched on earlier, to take a look at their inputs, take a look at their break evens, what they can get for some new crop cash sales and how that pencils in, still leaving some room for the upside into the spring and summer to make additional sales. And if they want to maintain some upside on new crop sales here, almost at $14 NOV futures, you can always come in with a call option behind that. But the markets are moving very fast, large swings, Super Bowl of the markets right now in an inflationary commodity environment. But I think it's important for producers, again, to just make sure they're locking in good price levels and profits for this upcoming year.
Ellen Dearden from Ag Review in Morton, Illinois, your final word?
We oftentimes look to wheat as being a leader in the grain futures, and I think right now the wheat has become a follower. So I'm watching beans and I'm watching meal to see what direction things will go.
And your final word, Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois.
Yeah, thanks, Todd. I think our outlook here, I mean, you know, in terms of price and in terms of where the markets are going, is cautiously optimistic as we roll into the new year here. But I think as a producer and as a watcher of markets, you also have to be cognizant of the downside risk for prices here and just some of the things that we can't control, these outside market elements, these geopolitical risks, the economic and inflationary things that we just talked about. So I think you have to gear your expectation towards, you know, elevated price volatility going forward. And in doing so, you know, every operation is different. As Logan mentioned, everybody's financials are different. Everybody's cash rent, everybody's input costs, however you want to look at that. But get yourself to a sales and marketing level that you feel comfortable with, both on old crop and new crop. As Logan mentioned, you can use options here to insulate that. If you make a cash sale, eliminate downside, calls and call spreads are a perfect way to keep some exposure in the market. If you're unsure about your new crop, you know, you can use option strategies to create a, you know, a floor and a cap that give you a very good range versus where we're at right now. But I think, you know, the idea here is that, you know, it's not the place to get complacent or to fall asleep. I mean, the outlook is positive here, and I think, but we've reached some levels here that air just a bit of caution on in terms of where we go forward. And I think we need a new fundamental driver here to continue to see these markets move higher. As we fade out of the South American crop cycle and the focus shifts from South American production over to the U.S. production cycle, we could be looking at a very different kind of sentiment in the marketplace. So just be aware of that and, you know, and hold on for the ride.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like. You can do that on our website at willag.org. There now, you'll also find a way to register for the Willag Farm Doc Spring Outlook. It's coming up on the 8th day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Should be a great day there for $25. We'll open the doors at 8 a.m. Central Time, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, for a Beef House roll and coffee. The Beef House lunch is included for that number. We'll talk with the ag economist from the University of Illinois, the Farm Doc team, throughout the day. We'll hear about the weather forecast from Nutrien Ag Solutions, Eric Snodgrass, and of course the Will Ag panelist will be there too, all for $25 at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana on Tuesday, March the 8th. Get yourself registered today at willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Dave Chatterton, Ellen Dearden, and Logan Kimmel. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.